that, Charles Sizemore will be our guest. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. China had a crackdown on Bitcoin. This was in the Wall Street Journal. Chinese authorities are preparing to shut down the country's Bitcoin exchanges, reflecting a growing unease with the virtual currency. I can't say I don't share their concern. The policy shift in the world's number two economy shows how nations are wrestling with Bitcoin and its place in the financial system. In China, the government's attack on Bitcoin comes as they worry about capital fleeing the country in a form of the digital currency. The largest of these, of course, is Bitcoin, the crypto or whatever you call it, a currency that's out there. It's surged in value since March, in part to the loosening restrictions that happened in Japan and the advancements in buying and selling. China has long obviously been a major hub for Bitcoin, which was created by an anonymous programmer during the depths of the 2008 financial crisis in as an alternative to official currency. Much of the world's Bitcoin is mined like you would mine gold or something like that. It's created through powerful algorithms. And 80% of the global Bitcoin activity actually took place with the yuan. So there we go. Beijing's crackdown on the Bitcoin is part of a broader effort to root out risk to the country's financial system. Officials earlier this year circulated a draft of anti-money laundering rules for Bitcoin exchanges, a powerful warning, even though the regulations were never formalized. Analysts attribute the sharp rise in Bitcoin last year to the Chinese investor who began buying it while at the same time selling their currency, the yuan. And then in April, Japan's financial service agency actually put in place rules that recognized Bitcoin as a payment method. Since then, Japan has become the top trading market for Bitcoin, accounting for almost half of the world's global volume. Virtual currencies, in theory, allow holders to bypass China's traditional banking system to move money outside of its capital-controlled borders, and that can make it more difficult for Chinese regulators to maintain a tight grip on the yuan as they, you know, just trade amongst each other. Charles Sizemore, a good friend of the show, is with me now. And Charles, I was asked at a I went to speak to a bunch of MBA students a few years ago at Indiana University, and one of them asked me about Bitcoin. And I turned to the professor and I said, "What's he talking about?" And he said, "Oh, it's some virtual currency." And I'm like, "I don't know anything about this." But as time has progressed, yeah, a lot of people know about it. A lot of people believe in this. Jamie Dimon came out.
It's
in the news. And Jamie Dimon of J.P. Morgan comes out and says it's a complete fraud, biggest fraud since the tulip thing back in the whatever year it happened, where people were frenzied over buying tulips. So what do you know about this?
I'll say this. I would not say it's a fraud. You know, if you say it's a fraud, that means there's some intent to intentionally deceive. And I wouldn't say that's the case. Now, I do understand why governments are scared to death of it, because they can't really control it. It's not like a national currency where you control it, you control the banking system, you can control its value relative to other currencies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the government exercises a lot of control there. Every government in the world does, not just us, of course. Now, something like Bitcoin, where it's completely outside of the traditional financial system, they don't really understand it. They can't control it, and so their knee-jerk reaction is just to clamp down on it. And if you're particularly China, I get that. China has a lot of problems, just for lack of a better word. I mean, they have a property bubble.
Mm-hmm.
They have a lot of debt in their system that there's really, you know, no good way to wash out. And so a lot of Chinese investors for decades, really, but particularly in the last several years, have been doing anything they can to get some of their wealth out of the country. There's just a lot of fear that there is a bubble there. So that's one of the reasons the Vancouver property market is so ridiculously expensive. Chinese investor that has the capital to do it is just trying to buy a little property in Vancouver just to have some sort of toehold outside of the Chinese financial system.
You know,
now,
go ahead.
Well, no, go ahead. I was going to go off in an entirely different direction. So,
well, I was thinking about my conversation with Rodney Johnson, both good friends of ours, and when we talked about gold being a currency or a commodity, and how he said, hey, you have to exchange gold into a a tradable currency to make it happen. So in his mind, it was a commodity. And going back to the financial crisis, you know, what went down? Everything except for cash and treasuries, which made us think that gold was a commodity. I kind of think of Bitcoin a little bit in that capacity, that maybe it's a little bit more of a commodity, a supply and demand thing. I know people that own it. They don't intend to sell it. And that worries me a little bit because an investment, yeah, in my mind, is something that you would buy and eventually sell and profit from. So I don't know. I'm still not completely convinced, but I would say this to people, that if you don't completely understand it, you either probably should not be investing in it, or you should have only the money that you can afford to lose parked into something like that. And I know that I have some people out there that are listening, Charles, that are going to say, oh, Hayes, you don't know anything. I don't know anything. I'm trying to admit to that. I don't know anything when it comes to this. It's just I've been doing this for 25 years, and I've seen things come and go.
Every successful investor is sufficiently humble. You know, they know. I mean, you can't be. You have to be humble to survive in this business for any length of time. Because if you pretend to know more than you do, you will get bitten. That is absolutely an ironclad law of the universe on that.
A good friend of mine who started buying Bitcoin a long time ago said that he would go to some ATM-style machine, stick a $100 bill in it, and then he would, in return, receive cryptocurrency into his virtual wallet. And I was like, man, that $100 bill had to go to some brother out there. Somebody collected that $100 bill. And I'm just not quite there. And I think about the dollar. You know, the dollar is kind of funny because, of course, you know, we all have dollars. Is what we use. It's backed by the full faith and credit of the United States government. I guess that's better. I don't really know than it being on some crypto change. Right. Exactly. So where do you think this thing's headed? I mean, we're a little, even though neither one of us are really that old, we're still kind of old school when it comes to these things. Where do you think this thing's headed?
Well, I'll say this. You know, how do you define a currency? People call this a cryptocurrency. Well, what makes something a currency? It's a unit of measure, it's a medium of exchange, and it's a store of value. So what does that actually mean? A unit of measure means, you know, we denominate things in dollars. You know, your car cost, you know, the price is listed in dollars. Now, could Bitcoin fill that role? Well, I guess you could translate a dollar price into a Bitcoin price and pay with Bitcoin if the merchant accepted it. So I guess it would loosely sort of meet that unit of measure criteria. As for medium of exchange, that's also debatable, but you could say, okay, I mean, it's fairly easy right now to do transactions in Bitcoin, and it does get easier by the day. I mean, to this day, though, if someone tried to pay me in Bitcoin, I would have no clue what to do with it. So it's not quite there on the medium of exchange, but I guess it's getting there little by little. But it really fails on the last criteria, store of value. Anything that is as volatile as Bitcoin right now is really poor to use as a currency. This thing is up. You know, how much is it up this year? It's up by some just phenomenal amount this year. Something that rises in value that much in that short of a period of time is unstable. Now, nobody complains about instability so long as it's going up.
Right.
I mean, volatility to the upside, that's great, but the issue is, I mean, that's not a store of value at that point. It really is quite speculative. So my view on Bitcoin is, look, I think the idea, the cryptocurrency, is probably here to stay for a while. There's just a lot of mistrust of governments in general. And so I think the idea of having some kind of currency outside of, you know, the government-controlled financial system, I get that. I do. But is Bitcoin it, or will something else come along in a year from now or 6 months from now that kind of does the same thing Bitcoin does, but it's bigger, it's more scalable? I don't know. You know, we'll see. I would be very reluctant to put any real money into Bitcoin right now, given how volatile it is. I would say if you want to speculate on it, who am I to tell you no? I mean, if you want to go buy a lottery ticket, who am I to tell you no? I mean, by all means, go out there and have fun and speculate. But I would not put your serious nest egg in this. Not yet, anyway. I mean, it's, you know, something that goes up this fast can also go down that fast or even faster. So I would say, you know, where does it go next? It's still evolving. We'll see.
Only time will tell.
But you know, only time will tell. I mean, and like I said, I think some kind of cryptocurrency is probably going to be around for a while. But I wouldn't put any real money into this.
I appreciate your opinion on that, and I'm sure there's people that listen to this show that probably are more in our side of the camp, but there's always people on the other side, and hey, it's up for debate, and Charles nor I are trying to predict or tell you to do one thing or another. It's totally up to you. Hey, Charles, this is off subject, but of course you're down in the great state of Texas. You live in the Dallas area, not in the Houston area that was struck so heavily by the hurricane, but you certainly have family down there, and you have some business down there. How are things? How are things going down in Texas?
You know, don't ever sell Texans short. We get our act together pretty quickly. I mean, if you saw the destruction in Houston, it was unbelievable. My mother's house, we were actually, you know, we're thankful the levee held. If the levee had given out, she would have 5 feet of water in her house. I mean, that's and some of her, you know, neighbors a few blocks over did. So that's, you know, that's what it was like there. Business is already getting back to normal little by little. But I'll say this, anyone in the country listening, if you can wield a hammer, if you have any sort of trade skills or construction skills, I think you have a job in Houston for the foreseeable future. The you know, the number of houses that need new sheetrock, you know, the number of buildings that just need to be gutted out and redone, I mean, flooring that has to be redone, carpet, all of that. I mean, it is going to be you're talking about the fourth biggest city in America, for crying out loud. Mm-hmm. This is going to be a very, very good opportunity for, you know, anybody with skills in the building trades. Good night. Pack up your stuff. Move to Houston. I'm pretty sure you'll find a job quickly.
And unfortunately, you know, all around the country, we're starving for those people because we have so much going on. So just that'll strain the labor force even more.
Well, that brings up a good point, actually. So, you know, I'm in Dallas, a couple hours up the road from Houston. If I had storm damage to my house tomorrow, if a thunderstorm blew into town and ripped the roof off my house, I'd have a real hard time finding someone to fix that right mm-hmm. now, because everybody with those skills is you know, heading to Houston at the moment. It's actually very hard to find. So you actually hit on something. There is going to be a bigger than usual shortage of contractor skills for the foreseeable future, for months or years into the future here, because pretty well everybody that has those skills is going to be rebuilding Houston right now, to a lesser extent Florida. So that's you know, if you have a, you know, I don't know, a leaky roof in Indiana, you might have to fix it yourself.
Fortunately, my brother's a roofer, so fortunately I have an inside track to getting those things repaired. But you're right, I mean, it's a tough market for people trying to find that kind of skilled labor, for sure. Charles Sizemore is my guest. I appreciate you hanging in there with me and giving us some information about Bitcoin. I did see this information that came from our friend Mick Higley at By the Numbers, that one in every seven automobiles in the Houston area was destroyed by Hurricane Harvey. So there's going to be probably an uptick in people getting some new cars down there as well.
Oh, you bet. You bet. It's a good time to be a Ford or GM salesman right now. There's a lot of F-150s to be replaced.
I bet. Well, guys, we appreciate you taking the time, Charles. I'm sure we'll be talking with you soon. Hopefully, I'll see you in Nashville at the big event coming up. Folks, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Equifax breach, what they say happened, and what are they offering, and how, if you were affected, how do you find out, and then what are some easy things you can do.